This podcast is recorded in 2022. Anemia is the most common hematological presentation that we see in general clinical practice. It's a major public health concern in the UK and around the world, affecting everyone from the very young to the very old. If left untreated, anemia can cause significant morbidity and can be a presenting sign of a more sinister underlying condition. Welcome to Pavable Pods for Docs. My name is Sophia. And in today's podcast, we will be covering the broad but very important topic of anemia. For visual aids on today's topic, head over to our website at pavable.com for high-yield revision notes and a question bank. Today, we are very fortunate to be joined by Wei Yi, a haematology registrar based in London. Welcome, Wei Yi. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me. Anemia in itself is obviously a very common presentation. It's often a presentation as a result of another underlying condition, or can be as a result of nutrition or perhaps a procedure that a patient is going through.
Following on from that introduction, let's just start with the very basics and define anemia. What is it? It's a low hemoglobin concentration due to a variety of causes, and there are absolute hemoglobin values below which we can diagnose anemia. And these can depend varying on the patient's age, whether they're pregnant or not, and also their sex. The values for adult men would be anything below 130 grams per liter. And then in adult non-pregnant women, it would be a hemoglobin value less than 120 grams per liter. So anemia is a really broad topic. And in order to make it more digestible, we've broken it down into the three subtypes. And these three subtypes are grouped together based on the red blood cell size. So this could be microcytic, so small, normocytic, meaning normal cell size, and then macrocytic, meaning large cell size. And the way we measure this is using a value that you see often on full blood count tests, and that's called your mean corpuscular volume or mean cell volume, which can be shortened to MCV. Now, microcytic, as I said, is small, then this would be an anemia with an MCV of less than 80 femtoliters. Normocytic is an anemia with a normal red blood cell size of 80 to 100 femtoliters. And then macrocytic defines a large kind of red blood cell volume. And that's defined as an anemia of an MCV over 100 femtoliters. Wei, do you want to jump in here and just tell us why we split these into these three categories and why it's relevant and what other red cell parameters we need to think about?
I think hematology is quite a visual specialty. We like looking at blood films and how the cells actually look like under the microscope. So this is a good way of hanging your differentials on, which is based on what might be happening at the bone marrow at the time. To understand why we go with microcytic, normocytic, and macrocytic, we also can think about how the hematology analyzer is recording red cell size and hemoglobin. It is recording size based on how the light is reflected when the red cells pass through the machine, and also records hemoglobin based on how much light is passing through the red cells. The other parameters which we might find helpful, as well as the MCV, is the MCH and the MCHC. So the MCH is mean cell hemoglobin, and MCHC is mean cell hemoglobin concentration, which are just ways of measuring how hemoglobinized the red cells are.
Let's move on to how we can tell if someone's got anemia or not. Often anemia can be picked up, incidentally on blood tests that are done for other reasons, but it can also be picked up due to symptoms. And the symptoms caused by anemia can really vary. And obviously this depends on what the driving cause of the anemia is. So Wei, can you talk us through some of like the barn door signs and symptoms of anemia that apply, across the board?
If we think about symptoms and what your patient might first come to you with, and if you don't already have a blood test showing that they are anemic, they would probably complain that they are more tired than usual. They may be more dyspneic or short of breath. They may complain about feeling faint or lightheaded, having more headaches than usual. If they have other comorbidities that might be exacerbated, especially if they have either cardiac comorbidities or respiratory comorbidities. For example, they may get chest pains or their angina might get worse. They may complain again of more breathlessness, or they may say that they are getting palpitations, which may be a sign that they are getting more tachycardic than usual. We talk about pallor. And so this is basically patients looking more pale than usual. Now, this might be dependent on what their natural skin color is, but it could be that their family members have pointed out to them.
Say someone presents to you and you don't have these blood tests already, and you think they might be experiencing anemia due to an underlying cause of whatever nature. What kind of investigations are your first line things that you think about ordering?
After you did an examination and you've taken your initial bedside observations, such as your heart rate, blood pressure, respiratory rate, temperature, you may even have the ability to do an ECG depending on where you are, you then think about more detailed investigations.
Your full blood count will clinch your diagnosis for you, and by this point you'll have the hematology markers that we mentioned earlier. Alongside this, you want to make sure that you have taken at least a biochemistry bottle. To diagnose one of the more common causes of anemia, you would need some iron studies from this. Iron studies would include getting a ferritin, making sure you have a transferrin saturation or an iron binding saturation, and also other hematimonics you would normally order, such as a B12 and folate, to exclude other explanations. You might also want an inflammatory marker, such as a baseline CRP, to help you interpret your iron study. Remember that ferritin can go up with inflammation. You can also ask for a blood film to be made. The morphology can help in the cause of the anemia. Depending on whether you think that the anemia has come on really suddenly, you might also be thinking about hemolysis, so you can add on a hemolysis screen. When we talk about a hemolysis screen, you would ask for a blood film, LDH, reticulocyte, and haptoglobin. The haptoglobin should be consumed, and therefore low if there is hemolysis. You would also make sure you had a liver function test so that we can get the bilirubin from this.
Now that we've broken down anemia into the three subtypes, we've thought a bit about how it presents, and we've looked also at what kind of investigations you do. Let's explore those three subtypes in a bit more detail. Microcytic anemia, so where you've got a low MCV and you've got this small red cell volume. Can you talk us through, you know, the common differentials and the possible causes of microcytic anemia?
I'm always thinking the most common reason will be something that's causing iron deficiency. The other thing would be bleeding or blood loss, which technically is also causing the microcytosis through causing iron deficiency. And less commonly, and depending on the area of the country you're working in or where you're coming from, you might also be thinking whether they have some associated alpha or beta thalassemia trait, but they can also be iron deficient alongside this.
Is iron deficiency anemia the most common cause of anemia?
It probably is in the world. So if we're looking at all the global statistics, the most common reason will be iron deficiency. In less developed countries, it tends to be because of poor nutrition and parasitic infections. But of course, for us, it'll be more nutritional problems, absorption, such as gut type diagnoses and malignancy, and possibly not even identifying an underlying cause early enough.
Let's move on to the next group. So that's our normocytic anemias. This is a so-called normal mean cell volume. Let's talk through the differentials.
When I see normal MCV indices, one of my differentials is inflammation. Inflammatory cytokines we know can affect hepcidin, and hepcidin is what regulates the uptake of iron from the gut. When someone has underlying inflammation, including comorbidities such as heart failure, liver failure, or chronic kidney disease, the way iron is processed by their bodies is affected. The sensitivity of the bone marrow to erythropoietin can also be affected, which is meant to physiologically stimulate normal red cell production. Normocytic anemia can also be due to mixed deficiencies. So if you have a mixture of large cells or so-called macrocytic cells alongside small cells or so-called microcytic cells, then the machine will report the mean cell volume, so it will report it as a normocytic value. Therefore, another normocytic differential is general absorption problems. This includes celiac disease, bariatric surgery, or previous significant gut resections, which can cause the mixed deficiencies because it is just a general problem with absorbing all nutrients, not just iron, or conversely, B12 and folate.
That's really interesting, actually. I hadn't, you know, that obviously makes complete sense that it's a mean volume. Yes. So actually, it's not concrete, you know, one of those three categories. Sometimes it just can be a complete mix. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so the third and final subtype we're talking about today, so macrocytic, let's talk through the differentials of macrocytic anemia.
One differential is, as I alluded to before, B12 deficiency. Alongside intake problems, there may be an inability to absorb B12, which is why after excluding dietary limitations and obvious gut absorption problems, we can think about pernicious anemia, which is why we may come on to do those intrinsic factor antibodies as part of the diagnostic investigations. As a country, we've only started to routinely fortify our non-whole wheat flour with folic acid. This is as a preventative measure for neural tube defects. However, the fortification which has been agreed on is at a much lower level than other countries which have seen this to be a good preventative measure. And therefore, we may still see folate deficiency as a possible cause of a macrocytic anemia. The other two common reasons for macrocytic anemia include liver disease and alcoholism. And of course, they are very closely linked together, but you can also have alcoholism without liver disease and vice versa. The alcohol itself can cause a macrocytic anemia. Now, the other thing to think about is that your red cell production isn't able to keep up with a consumption problem. So you might also see macrocytosis with hemolysis. And this is because of those younger red cells, which are larger, those reticulocytes, need to come out from the bone marrow sooner because of the external peripheral destruction. With this sort of hemolysis, we're talking about either immune or non-immune driven hemolysis. So immune hemolysis would be caused by abnormal antibodies binding to the red cells and then causing the destruction either intravascularly or within the spleen. And then non-immune causes, which we will be thinking about problems with the red cell itself. These differentials are probably more hematology specific, but you could be thinking about membrane problems, which cause an early destruction in the spleen, or problems with the red cell itself or the hemoglobin itself, such as in the case of thalassemia or sickle cell disease, which also lead to shorter red cell lifespan.
Let's come back to the beginning of our three subtypes that we started talking about. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the basis of management. As we've mentioned multiple times, a very broad topic. So the management definitely depends on the underlying cause. So we can only touch on it in this podcast. And the very important point to just touch on here before we talk about all the three subtypes and how we manage them is how urgent the management of anemia is. You know, does the individual in question need a transfusion? Wei, can you touch on that a bit for us and just talk to us about how you decide who needs a transfusion and who doesn't?
If somebody presents to you with the symptoms we mentioned earlier as their presentation of anemia, whether someone needs a transfusion is really dependent on just how unwell they are. You'll be looking at observation type parameters like blood pressure, their heart rate, things that you're observing of them alongside their examination, but also what other comorbidities they may have, which will have an impact on their ability to tolerate the anemia and also how long it takes for them to become so anemic. If it's over a longer period of time, you're actually able to compensate a lot more. Overall, don't just look at the number, but definitely look at the patient in front of you alongside your observations and how they're feeling, what they're telling you, and what other comorbidities they're having to put up with before deciding that they may need to have an urgent transfusion.
Yeah, absolutely. Following on from that, with microcytic anemia, we've touched on our kind of main differentials being an iron deficiency cause, or, you know, if we've omitted that, you know, bleeding or a thalassemia of some description. Do you mind just touching on the basic management?
Microcytic anemia is most commonly going to be some cause of iron deficiency. After you've decided whether they need to have a transfusion or not, you then need to think about how to make the patient iron replete again. There are two ways of doing this. So firstly, oral, and secondly is intravenously. So of course, oral is something which can be much easier to administer. It can be managed in primary care. It doesn't require referral up to secondary care. It doesn't require close monitoring. But the problem is that it does require patients to be able to tolerate it and complete the course. When you look at the BNF, the prescription is usually 3 times a day. I would go with a ferrous fumarate rather than a sulfate because it's much gentler on the gut. And also there's a lot more guidance out there now to say that we don't need to actually dose this 3 times a day because there is a limit to how much iron our body can take. So I would usually advise taking 1 tablet every other day first thing in the morning with some ascorbic acid, usually orange juice, and get the patient to actually do this for a while and see if they tolerate it before you say that they have failed oral iron treatment. If you do have the ability to give them IV iron and they've already presented to secondary care severely anemic, you can do this as well. You just need to make sure that they have been counseled about the risk of an allergic reaction to the actual component of the IV iron. And that is the reason we have to monitor patients closely when we are giving this drug intravenously, because there is that small risk of having an allergic reaction.
Coming on to normocytic anemia, we touched on the typical differentials, and you talked about how, you know, typically inflammatory underlying causes can cause a normocytic anemia, and it could also be a mixed picture. How do you manage normocytic anemias?
With normocytic anemia, it is probably going to be due to an underlying chronic inflammatory cause. So really, it's going to be the treatment of the underlying disease. And if it is a direct inflammatory condition, then I'm sure the clinician treating that condition is working hard to try and reduce that inflammation that's affecting that patient already, depending on using things like immunosuppressants to do that. Some older patients, though, may not be able to tolerate the level of anemia that they have. And so you may need to think about putting them on some sort of transfusion program. But this is something that we will discuss in hematology clinic.
Okay, and then finally, microcytic anemia. So we've talked about how both immune and non-immune causes of hemolysis can result in a microcytic anemia, as can deficiencies of various descriptions. Just touch on the management of those for us.
In the case of B12 and folate deficiencies, or the megaloblastic anemias, when you do see these deficiencies, you need to think about replacement. Now, the most important thing to remember when replacing B12 or folate is that if you have both deficiencies, you need to replace the B12 first. If you start replacing the folate first, you can worsen the neurological defects if they already have them, which have been caused by the severe B12 deficiency. If they have a deficiency that's causing anemia, go with the B12 IM injections, not the tablets, because you're going to be waiting a long time to get them replete and also risk them developing neurological symptoms if they haven't already done so. With folate, it is just folic acid tablets, but prescribe the higher doses. And then when we're thinking about liver causes and alcohol causes, obviously treating the underlying reason for this and making sure that in the case of alcohol excess, they're able to access the correct systems that can help them with this. And finally, we've mentioned briefly immune and non-immune causes of hemolysis. So if it is an immune cause of hemolysis, immunosuppression is really what we would do. And this will be led by hematologists, because we may also need to decide on transfusions. And it's not that straightforward due to the interactions the antibodies can have on the group and screen assays. So please do involve us if you think you've got someone that has an immune hemolysis. And then the non-immune causes of hemolysis will be treating the underlying reason for it. So this will typically be patients such as thalassemia, or who have thalassemia or sickle cell disease. We will expect a level of underlying hemolysis that is always ongoing. And it's just part of managing the condition to the point of keeping their hemolysis at a manageable level.
What we tend to do in all of our podcasts is introduce a clinical scenario, and this allows us to unpack and think about what we've already discussed. Imagine that you're in an acute medicine setting like A&E or ambulatory care, and a female patient in her 20s comes in. Her hemoglobin is 50 grams a litre, and she's also got an MCV of 72, which in most trusts would make her a microcytic anemia. On talking to this individual, she tells you she's got menorrhagia in her history. She's now on the progesterone only pill, but there is a family history that's significant for sickle cell and thalassemia, and she's not been born in the UK. So it's worth bearing in mind that ethnicity can play a part when it comes to differentials. She's got a Caribbean heritage, and then some of the other blood tests are back. She's got hemolyzed iron studies and ferritin. Wait, could you dissect this down and tell us what differentials you'd be thinking about and what you want to do going forward?
This is quite a typical case that can come through A&E. I think people will tend to panic when they see a hemoglobin of 50 grams per liter. And as we've mentioned before about transfusion, I would want to try and avoid it in this female patient who is in her 20s because she is of childbearing age. So we don't want to expose her to a transfusion that might cause complications with pregnancy in the future. It'd be really important to assess how she is tolerating her anemia. And actually, most patients in this age without any other comorbidities should be fine, because they would have got to this level over a very long period of time. The other thing that's shouting out to me is that she has a history of menorrhagia, but she's now on the progesterone-only pill, and she tells you, oh, she's not had a period. Now, I think it's really important to dissect that a bit, how long the menorrhagia has been going on for, maybe understand while she was having menorrhagia how many times she might have been changing her pads, and that can deplete your iron stores over a period of time. And also just find out how long she's been on this progesterone-only pill and whether she's ever been on iron tablets. I think that will all help you decide if it is still the menorrhagia causing this problem, or if you have to think about another reason that she's become so anemic. It is a problem that the iron studies and ferritin has been hemolyzed, so I would recommend that these are all sent off again. People can get quite excited about the family history. Not being born in the UK just means she might not have undergone the screening, or her parents might not have undergone the screening that we would have offered here. So this does mean that she is at risk of being a carrier, because it's unlikely she has the condition herself, having reached the age of 20 without any other problems. I wouldn't jump to do the screening now, because you've still got a patient who is iron deficient and you need to get her iron replete before you can do a hemoglobinopathy screen. Because she is in a hospital setting, I would try to see if I can get her an IV iron infusion and just counsel her about the risk for it. There's a risk of anaphylaxis, and then just provide that to her so that she can start feeling better. Make sure there's some sort of follow-up either in ambulatory care or in a GP surgery, just to make sure she is getting better and her anemia is improving. And then think about all the like sort of long-term things about putting her onto some tablets, and then just making sure that, you know, she continues to not have menorrhagia in the future, and that she does in fact get her iron source back.
Can I ask, actually, you mentioned that you'd have to make a replete before then screening for those other conditions. How mm-hmm. long do you typically have to have someone replete for before you can consider doing those tests?
If you get her an iron infusion, you're going to get her up to probably a normal level and then just put her on tablets to actually get her stores back. I would wait probably just 3 months because it probably takes that much time of taking iron tablets to get her to normal stores. And there's absolutely no rush, unless, of course, she's saying that she wants to start a family really soon. But again, before pregnancy, you want someone to be completely iron replete so they don't run into troubles throughout their pregnancy as well.
Okay, fantastic. Have you got any take-home messages that you want your F1s or your final year med students to be hot on?
Don't just look at the numbers. Talk to your patient. An understanding of how they're looking is really important. And that will also drive the urgency of your management. Even though there's so many numbers that we look at, try and integrate that with the patient in front of you, and that will direct you to how best to manage them.
Fantastic. That's it for today. Thank you so much to Wei for joining us. And thank you to all for listening. And we hope today's discussion has been helpful. To test your application of today's knowledge, head over to our website at plubable.com for an extensive question bank and revision note resource. We'll see you next time.